This is Jim Inkster. Coming today on the show, we'll visit with former Congressman, former state lawmaker Charlie Malasaw. He was in Congress from 2005 to 2011 as a conservative Democrat. There aren't many of those left, and we'll talk with him about what happened along the way and his ill-fated campaign against David Vitter in 2010. Why did the voters not respond to the message conveyed by Charles Malasaw, now a prominent lobbyist in our city? And of course, this week, the political world is abuzz with the defeat of Eric Cantor, the number two person in the U.S. House of Representatives, a Republican falling to a Tea Party candidate in the great state of Virginia. And we'll also hear on this day from the ultimate Good Samaritan, in my life, Molly Sullivan. We'll talk more when we return after this timeout. This is Jim Inkster. You're listening to 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge. 297-5633 is your number. Outside our area, you may call toll-free at 877-217-5757, and you may reach us by email, inkstershow@wrkf.org. Frank Barnett is producing, and I want to acknowledge the contributions, fine ones as always, from the guest hosts over the last few days, Jim Nickel yesterday on Wednesday, and Robert Travis Scott, who sat in the host chair, as he's done a few times in recent vintage, on Monday and Tuesday. Thanks to Robert. Thanks to Jim. And in studio to begin our conversation today is former Congressman and former State House member Charlie Malasaw, the pride of Napoleonville, who served from 2005 to 2011 in the U.S. House of Representatives, then ran for the United States Senate against David Vitter and lost in 2010, but now remains an avid follower of Louisiana and national politics. He is a lobbyist, and he knows the national scene fairly well, and of course, there was a big shakeup in the U.S. House this week. We will talk with him about that and more. Good morning, Congressman Malasaw.
Good morning, Jim. Good to be here.
Nice to see you. Well, what's going on with Eric Cantor losing to a man who spent a couple hundred thousand dollars? Cantor may have spent as much as $8 million. How did that happen?
I understand he spent almost as much on stakes as his opponent spent on his whole campaign. I guess it depends on who's spinning it, whether it's the Democrats spinning it or the Tea Party spinning it. Several things happened. He neglected paying attention to and having a presence, physical presence in his district on a regular basis. Some people get enamored with their positions. The rumor is that he was probably one of them. He was doing what he needed to do for his party because of his position, raising money for the other members to help them in their races, and then got blindsided from the political spin of the Tea Party. They've resurrected themselves, and it's kind of now you see we're there. And then from the Democratic standpoint, let's just sit and gloat, and we'll figure out who beat each other up next, and hope that there's more of it.
It sounds vaguely familiar.
Yeah, I think we've seen that scenario before. The more things change, the more they stay the same, I think, is the old adage.
In Louisiana, we have Governor Jindal, who's accused of doing what Congressman Cantor was doing, campaigning for national positions at the expense of local attention. You've been down at the Capitol. Was that evident during this session?
The murmurings among the membership of the legislature, much disgruntlement, not a feeling of any leadership or guidance. One of the things, and when I was in the state legislature, I was one of the quadrant, I guess, that was never for term limits. You have to have, in spite of the fact that some people believe that they get entrenched, that's one thing, but at the reality of it is the continuity, the institutional knowledge, the things that people depend on when they come there new. And if you look back at the last election cycle, I think it was some like 88 members of the House of Representatives were first-termers. So you've got the oldest guy. The guy longest serving is Jeff Arnold, and he's at right 12 years in the House, I think, maybe a few more than that because he might have got caught in a special election. you know, that doesn't tend to have provide for stability. Even though people love to hate their politicians, even though the legislature is demonized, probably worse, you know, as a body, they're demonized the worst. Individually, they keep getting reelected. That was kind of the perception back when they made the change. I was out of the legislature by that time. I look at it now, and I think the money issues, one of the problems, one of the major problems. The term limits is one of the major problems. And the reapportionment is one of the major problems that is giving us governance that is based on ideology rather than governance on what's good and right and what works for the people of the state.
Charlie Malonso, who's been around the block a few times as a state lawmaker and as a federal legislator, and it all began for you as a driver for Edwin Edwards, right?
I guess that would be correct. I met my wife, and Edwin tells that story to this day. That's been over, as a matter of fact, in August, it'll be 43 years, I believe, that Peach and I have been married, and we met in 1971 while she was working in the for a guy named Jim Carvin, who ran a company called Communications, Inc. in New Orleans and was back then kind of the New Orleans political communications guru. And then, of course, I worked in the Edwards campaign, and we were several floors upstairs, met in an elevator one day, and it's history.
Must have been a quick courtship.
We got married a year later. We dated during the campaign. As a matter of fact, the first date, she and I were supposed to go to a Rolling Stones concert, I believe it was, and I got a phone call from the infamous Clyde Vadreen, who said, "Met Charlie, you got to drive the governor tonight. Can you do that?" And I said, "Well, yeah, I can do that." So Peachy and I'm trying to remember whether she and a friend came in another car or whether that she and a friend went to the Rolling Stones, because I never went to the Rolling Stones concert.
They opened their world tour in Baton Rouge.
I saw that.
Yeah, well, 43 years ago, now I guess probably closer to 44 when you were campaigning for governor with Edwin Edwards.
Yeah.
What kind of a guy, that's half a lifetime ago for him. What kind of a guy was he?
Well, you know, I learned quite a bit from Edwin, and people have their opinions. They're either love him. It's kind of the like the show Love It or List It. They either love him or they hate him. Mm-hmm. And there's still some people in between because there's a younger generation who didn't really know him. You know, I could get in depth into it. One of the things that I know about Edwin is he knew the law. People say, you know, he broke the law. Edwin could track that gray line. And I saw him many times, but I never saw him cross that line. That was one of the things that I observed of Edwin. The other thing that I observed, which I tried to model myself after, was when you have a conversation with a person or a group, you have an honest conversation. And if you can help them, you tell them. If you can't help them, you tell them. If you can help them and it changes, they're the first ones you call. You don't let them hear on the street that things have changed or the situation's changed. Like him or not, Edwin was one of the most upfront, to the fault, honest with the people that he dealt with. You know, things change in a political scenario. So if it changed and it may not have been his fault. Some people had a tendency to blame him for it, but all politicians get those kind of things pointed at them.
You obviously still like him.
I do. I respect him. He was a mentor. Some people say, that makes you bad. Of course, I was a Democrat, still am a Democrat. The president's a Democrat. A lot of people voted against me because the president was a black president. I can tell you stories about that. And, you know, we're talking about having lost the election. If you go back and look at the regimen of ads and direct mail pieces that went out, it wasn't about me, a bad person. It was about me, a Democrat in the party with Nancy Pelosi and Barack Obama and Mr. Reed, which they spent a lot of money and time making the devil out of those people. And then, of course, tying connection. And I see that going on right now in the Mary Landrieu race. There's an ad that's been running ad infinitum to the ad nauseum. And it's a guy that says, you know, talks about Mary Landrieu and Obamacare. Well, if you go to South Carolina, the only thing difference is he talks about the same face, talks about Kay Hagan and Obamacare. And if you go to Arkansas, the same man is saying the same thing about Mark Pryor and Obamacare. And it's Koch brothers or whoever's spinning this is, it's just continuing to do a negative, and negative consistently has an impact. One of the things I see on Mary's numbers, they seem to have stabilized. I think that she's bottomed out in the 40s. So now it's a matter of where do we go from here?
When you ran against Senator Vitter, I think you had one debate.
Yes, one in New Orleans.
One. And Senator Vitter, who was ahead in the polls, to his credit, he did debate you, although it was one time.
Yeah, there was offerings for many more, but
well, he got worked over pretty heavily by Greg Merriweather on the prostitution issue, and
I think it was more about breaking the law as much as it was,
which was related to the prostitution issue, and next year Senator Vitter will be running for governor. Do you think he'll win?
That's a great question. It's still over a year away. Obviously, he's a contender, and the dynamics, just like Senator Landrieu's race, we've got to November, so the dynamics of the race, what's going on right now, will not necessarily be what will be going on in October and November. And if you look at the races she's had in the past, she was heading downhill until she hit about August or September, and then either found an issue or found something that something arose that rose the phoenix, and she came back and won her races. So does it happen again? That'll be an interesting to see. I think the race, both the governor's race next year and the senatorial race this year, will be ones for political sports people to watch.
Now, you could have switched parties, and if you had, it's quite likely you would have stayed in Congress and that you would be the Republican candidate against Senator Landrieu now, and probably would be the favorite in this race.
Well,
so you may have sacrificed your political career by staying a Democrat. Any regrets on this?
No. I am who I am. I laugh because I find most of the people that espouse all the conservative views are between Moon Griffon and the other talk show people that read the morning line that comes out from the political, from the Republican and the Tea Party. Talking points. They're all saying the same thing. And then when you challenge a point, they get upset because, you question them. I grew up a Democrat. My daddy said, register as a Democrat. Back in those days, if you weren't a Democrat, you weren't going to get elected to office. Not that I had any thoughts about running or getting elected. Long term is I am a fiscal conservative. On the scale, I am to the right of center on dollars and budgets, and to the left of center on social issues. I believe this. I believe, as most of the religions have espoused through the years, is that we should be here to help those that can't help themselves, and that all men are created equal, all women are created equal. And, that's just me. Sometimes you don't get to vote the way you want to because it's not necessarily your district and what they want. So there's some perplexing days for people like myself.
A good question from a listener. Robert, he wants to know if Congressman Cassidy will, presuming he's the Republican survivor in the race against Senator Landrieu, will he debate Senator Landrieu?
That'll be an interesting question. I think if I were the challenger, I would want to debate.
I'm not sure about this.
Well, and that's where I was going to. However, as a former liberal Democrat who wrote a health care package that resembled, I guess, some of what Romney had.
You're talking about Cassidy.
Yeah. There's some things in everybody's trunk that's back there that will get dug out. And when we get into the heat of the campaign, we'll
All
see.
Right. 297-5633, your number. Back with Charlie Melanson, 90 Seconds on WRKF. This is Jim Inkster. You're listening to 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge, 297-5633 or 877-217-5757. Former Congressman, former state lawmaker Charlie Melanson, who is a Democrat, and as mentioned, if he had stayed, if he had switched parties, I think he quite possibly would be the ordained Republican candidate against Senator Landrieu, who, like any Democrat at this time, would be vulnerable because there is an unpopular Democratic president in office, unpopular in Louisiana, highly popular in other parts of the country. Why is that?
We're still, decades back in our thinking and thought process in Louisiana.
Is it about race?
I think it's about race. I'll tell the story election night when I ran for the state house, when I ran for the Congress, the community of Pierrepont, which is in Assumption Parish, and they know me quite well, was always a stronghold for me. Assumption Parish always voted well for me. I don't think I ever came out of Pierrepont with less than about 78%. And on election night, and Pierrepont is an all-white community. I lost Pierrepont. I had one woman that I know the family, the daughter of the mom and dad that I'm friends with, made a statement to a person that she couldn't vote for me because I shook hands with President Obama. I shook hands with President Bush. I shook hands with President Bush's daddy. I shook hands with Bill Clinton, but I shook hands with the president. And this is a person who comes from a family that I don't consider or wouldn't have thought of as making that kind of statement. But it is what it is. That was most of the as a matter of fact, that was 95% of all the ads, I guess is a fair enough number, that were run, and they were all run about Obama and immigration, Obama and health care, Obama and Nancy Pelosi, and you know. And that was all the ads and the direct mail pieces. It wasn't about Charlie Melanson. Mm-hmm. And, of course, he had at least $2 to $1 for me in outside monies coming in that we'd run some positive ads, get our numbers up, be in competition, and then as soon as our ads stopped, he'd start running the negatives, and we'd bottom out again.
Well, you did do better in that race than President Obama has in either of his two races in Louisiana.
That's some consolation.
But is the party over for conservative Democrats in Louisiana?
Well, I think right now, if you look at the Congress, there's probably no more than 4 or 5 blue dogs left because of the reapportionment.
You're saying nationally?
Nationally, yeah. I mean, you think about the blue dogs, and most of us used to come from the South. A lot of them converted to Billy Tozans and others, and it just got to the point. And then you lost the Tuesday Morning Club Republicans because they were told the conservative line, or you're off of the committees, or you lose your rankings and such as that. And so basically, and Pelosi was the night that the Blue Dogs had such a bad night in, 2010, supposedly Pelosi was applauding that in our office. Because we were a bane to her. We represented people that weren't yellow dogs. We represented some that were yellow dogs, but the majority of our districts were people weren't necessarily Republican, but conservative Louisianians. And that's what the blue dogs, that's how we voted. That's how we gave the majority to the Democrats. That's how the Tuesday Morning Club gave the majority to the Republicans. But then all of a sudden got squeezed out by the conservative element on the Republican side and the Blue Dogs, the liberal element on the Democratic side.
All right. 297-5633, 877-217-5757, and Inkster Show at WRKF.org for former Congressman Charlie Melanson. Ariane says she was supportive of you, but was somewhat dismayed at your concession speech.
Well, I was...
You were angry, weren't you?
I was angry because of the fact that I never got the opportunity to have the debates. I never got the opportunity, because of money, lack of money against the incumbent, to put the issues out there, to really run the race. And so I was a frustrated boy. Yeah, and I'm disappointed in myself that I did it, but it was just the mood I was in that night. I had just gotten the results on Pierpont before we went out there. That's when I knew it was all over. When I can't carry a place where they know me, and they've been knowing me since I was a kid, and all of a sudden my problem isn't me, but it's somebody else. Right. Yeah, that's
all because you're not hanging out with our kind, or yeah. You are hanging out with others who are not our kind.
No. Well, I had some Republican friends that I served in the legislature with. They'd come to see me right before I decided, made the decision to run, wanted me to switch parties. And I told them, I said, first of all, your national party is too far to the right. I can't get there. Second is, if I switch, the Democrats will not vote for me, the Republicans, because I'll be a rhino, won't vote for me. So I'll run even worse than I might run. So I don't think I gain anything. They at the time said, well, we know you. We'd really like to support you. And I said, well, just do it, you know, do it in whatever way you can. They came back about a year ago and said, change parties and run for governor, because David Vitter is going to be governor, we're afraid. And I said, I've been thrown under the bus once by you. They said, well, we had to make a decision between having a Democrat in that senatorial seat or having a Republican. I said, yeah, but I was the Democrat. Remember, y'all came talk to me. And just because I was going to, if I would have put an R behind my name rather than a D, you thought you could support me. I'm sorry, that doesn't wash. And they said, well, you mad at me? I said, no, I'm not mad at y'all. Y'all did what I kind of expected you would do, but that's water under the bridge. It's history.
297-5633, if you'd like to talk to Charlie Melançon, who is a straight shooter, and I don't think there's any doubt that he is conveying a message that many share. And some, of course, are against him and against the politics that he espoused, and I'm sure he'd be happy to hear from you as well. Phil in Jefferson Terrace, good morning, Phil. You're on the air with Congressman Melançon.
Good morning, Jim. Good morning, Congressman.
Good morning.
Then I have a suggestion, a question, and a suggestion. My question is, what do you think about that retroactively canceling out the lawsuits that the levy board brought against the oil and gas companies? That was the big law that got passed in the legislature. And my suggestion is, I kind of know what to do with all those failing schools that kids should have choice to not have to go to. Let's just go ahead and, because it's now a crime to be poor, a person of color, just turn them into prisons. Hire the teachers, they could guard them, train them for their life of crime.
The education issue is one of those that would take a lengthy debate. The retroactive law, I as a legislator would not, and Robert Adley is a friend of mine and I have a lot of respect for him, but I would not fathom introducing a bill that retroactively went back to change something. As a matter of fact, it irked me yesterday because I found out I'm a licensed insurance agent. I'm going through taking my continuing ed, and I looked on and it said if I had been a licensed insurance agent turned 65 by January 1 of 2012, that I wouldn't have to be taking the continuing ed. Well, I was a couple of months behind because my birthday was October of 2012. And why they put a date and just say, once you turn 65, you don't need to take the test. But anyway, the retroactive I don't think is good. Everybody knows that we've got to do something about saving the wetlands. And if we don't do a damn thing, forget about South Louisiana, New Orleans, Lafayette, Houma. It's all going to perish. I won't see it in my lifetime, but it's gone. So the reality is, we need to stand up and do the things that are right. I think that lawsuit possibly could have brought people to the table to negotiate and have conversations, but the politics of this day and time, it's my way or no way, and that's an unfortunate thing. Times have changed.
Monica downtown. Monica, good morning. You're on the air with Charlie Melançon.
Good morning, Congressman. How are you?
Good morning. How are you?
I'm good. I've always been a huge fan. You actually know me, but we'll talk about that later. and I've always been a huge fan of yours. And I just want you to address the issue because a lot of people don't know this, but the Louisiana delegation used to get along very well.
Yes.
And it used to be if you were from Louisiana, you were Louisiana first and a Republican or a Democrat next. And because I worked for someone else when Senator Vitter came to Congress, all of that changed because of him. And I don't think that people understand how much that has hurt Louisiana. And so I know that you were working for the sugar industry then, and if maybe you could just address that a little bit so people can know about that.
Yeah, that is a frustration, and I won't put the blame on any one person, but the relationships, particularly, and I had it occur to me on several occasions, where other members from the Louisiana delegation got on radio or made some comment. One or two of them were actually lies or totally misconstrued what I had or had not done. That doesn't build relationships. That builds walls. And it used to be that years ago, if one member of Congress from Louisiana was traveling into another member of Congress, the courtesy of a phone call to let them know they were there used to exist. The members of Congress as a group, when they were eight, when they were seven, when they were, and after they got down to seven and six, it stopped. But they used to meet once a week. They'd have lunch together. They'd talk about the mutual problems and how they could help each other. That went away. That disappeared. It's kind of you're on your own. Do your best. When I got to Congress, the word was that my staff came in one day and said, we got a problem. The Republican, the word on out there is that you will pass no legislation. They were in the majority in your first term because they figured they can beat you next time. So basically what I called my staff in, I said, we're going to do like we used to do when I was in the state legislature, and we're going to make friends with the ranking members and with the chairmen of the committees and the staff people, and let them know that we're there to help them and we need their help. And we did stuff by amendments and got people to do the thing, especially after Katrina. If it wouldn't have been able to legislate by amendment, and I was Bill Jefferson was there, but he had his own problems and wasn't focused on Katrina or the aftermath of it. So I was truly the only person that was working to try and get those things put on bills in the House that resolved issues from all the way on the coast, on the west coast of Texas, all the way to the Mississippi coast and the city of New Orleans. That was a yeoman's job. My staff, let me just tell you, I had a wonderful staff. The thing I miss the most is my staff. My wife and I will tell you that to this day. We were very fortunate, hardworking, smart, understood what needed to be done.
Well, one of your guys is now running Media Matters.
Yeah.
Bradley Bayshot.
Bradley Bayshot.
Yeah. 297-5633 for one of the most youthful 65-year-olds on the planet. You were born same month, same year, October of 47, as Hillary Clinton. People say she's too old to be president. Some people do.
Well, I don't think I'm too old. I just don't know. Now that I've got three grandchildren, and I get to look at them on my screen, on my computer and my iPhone and things like that, there's things I'd rather look at and think about in a given day than sitting on the telephone and calling people and begging them for money and knowing that people are going to be out there saying things about you that aren't true. And you just get to the point of why. You go into public service, you don't go in for abuse, but you get the abuse for public service.
Ann on Bluebonnet. Ann, good morning. You're on the air with Charlie Melanson.
Good morning, Congressman.
Good morning.
I wanted to thank you for your integrity over the years, and I fully support that you did not change parties and stuck with your principles. I have a question, which is, I think a lot of the current animosity is due to the way that the districts have been gerrymandered, and what can be done to undo some of that? What kind of effort would that take?
Well, I thank you for the question, and I appreciate the support. It's people like you that kept me interested in politics for the years, but the gerrymander has a significant impact on the acumen of the public body, whether it's the Senate or the House, or whether it's in Congress or at the state level, and even now getting to city councils and all of the and local governments. We have gerrymandered ourselves into an ideological nation that has got reds and blues and very little of in between, the purple. That's where the Blue Dogs and the Tuesday Morning Republicans were. And there were enough of those people that when it came to an issue with the Blue Dogs and the Tuesday Morning Club guys, that when there was an issue, we could help negotiate the right and the left and find the compromise that were needed to perfect the legislation that worked for the people of the country. What you've got now is when two parties sit down at the table, and what happened during Obamacare and cap and trade is those guys didn't even sit down at the table. They just said no. Well, they relinquished their responsibilities as members of Congress because they were elected to legislate, to try and do the will of the people, and they didn't do it. And to blame people now that Obamacare is bad, I'm sorry, there is much to blame for a bad bill because they wouldn't be part and parcel of it. And so, therefore, they allowed for the left wing of my party to draft a bill with a few little things in there that maybe compromised a few of the Blue Dog votes. They never really got to anything that could have brought me over because the bill had some flaws. But what you do with that is you fix the problem.
Okay. Chris and Gonzalez. Hello, Chris. You're on the air with Charlie Melanson.
Hi, good morning.
Morning, Chris.
I would say Jim's a great guest. And Congressman Melanson, I would just ask if you have ever considered running for governor of Louisiana, and just to say that you bring a very pragmatic approach and an approach that seems to is reasonable and gets the will of the people done. And with that, I'll hang up and listen to your comment.
Well, thank you. Thank you. You humble me, and I appreciate the thought. Have I ever had the conversation or thought about running for governor? I'd be lying to you if I told you no. Has it been a serious did I pursue it? The answer to that is no. I went into public service for public service. I enjoyed my time. I worked with people. I didn't care who they were. If they had a problem, I was there. As I tell people, bureaucrats are there to say no. Politicians are there to say yes and to find the balance to make things work for people. And too many politicians have lost sight of that.
Bridget on Jefferson, you're on WRKF with Charlie Melanson. Hi, Bridget.
Ms. Melanson, you spoke to the necessity to raise funds as a legislator. I would like to hear your comments regarding Citizens United and the recent decisions by the Supreme Court in changing campaign finance.
That actually aggravates the living hell out of me. You know, if you look at Mr. Cantor's race, his opponent that won says you can't be bought, but too often when you're spending $5 and $6 million as opposed to a couple of hundred thousand, you are being bought. In my race for the Senate, that we know of, about $14 million was spent in that race by my opponent. I spent less than $5 million. And like I said, we'd run positive ads. Our numbers would go up in the public. Then as soon as we finished, he'd run the negatives, and they dropped back down. And we knew when it got down to the end, it was probably he was going to unload on us, and he did. 22 direct mail, color direct mail pieces to every white household in the state. No, none of Afro-Americans, just the whites.
297-5633. Back with Charlie Melanson for a few more minutes after this 90-second pause on WRKF. This is Jim Inkster. You're listening to 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge. A bit more time with Congressman Charlie Melanson. 297-5633 is your number if you'd like to join Congressman Melanson, our remaining time with him. Charlotte in Iberia Parish. Charlotte, you're on the air with Charlie Melanson.
Thank you for taking my call. Thank you for being a Democrat, Congressman Melanson, and for being a person who has not forgotten about the required sacrifices made during the World War II era and the policies that pulled people out of the dire straits of the Depression, with the selective and creative memory stating that they accomplished their position through their own efforts without anyone else's assistance. Thanks again for your service.
Thank you for that comment. I appreciate it.
You were born when FDR was, I guess Harry Truman was president, but he hadn't been gone long. He died in 45, you were born in 47, so the New Deal and the Fair Deal were part of your youth.
Yeah.
I'm sure your parents were New Deal Democrats.
I can remember going out to the Civil Air Patrol spotting sessions on Sundays to identify planes coming out of Lakefront Airport to identify and call them in. You know, we were still in the aftermath of the war. And so, yeah, some of those things that, and I still love the national parks are my favorite place in the world. And that's, you know, the WPA and CCC and those kind of things. I didn't really know them, but historically now I know them and have a fond appreciation for them.
Rick Causey writes, the anger, the division, the ignorance, the heads in the sand. I just don't like politics anymore in this country. I'm considering leaving the country to be somewhere civil. Is it that bad?
Well, I've made a comment to many of my friends that depending on the outcome of this governor's election.
In fact, I've heard that.
I was thinking I'd move to Costa Rica, to which the people who don't like me say yay. And one friend asked me, he says, why Costa Rica? And I said, because it's an hour closer to my grandchildren than is Panama. You know, with everything, and of course you're hearing right now with what's going on in Nicaragua and Honduras and
well, you may have buried Guatemala. The lead, though. The word I heard from more than one person, and you said it, was that if David Vitter's elected, I'm moving to Costa Rica. Did you really say that?
I've said that. The frustrations of the overtones in politics, and I should say the covert politics that exist out there, because nobody will admit that they're racist. Nobody will admit. And when you're running a campaign on guns, gays, and a
God,
I'm sorry. That's not what government, that's not what our forefathers fought for. That's not what they wrote the Constitution for. Let's get back to governing and making this country what the great power that it should be. What was the movie that opened up with, was it Newsroom? I think it was, where the guy was sitting at a panel at a university, and somebody asked him this question about, isn't America great? And he just started listing where we were ranking in the world these days. And it was kind of like, we're not the great country we used to be. We can be, but we just need to get back to people working together. One of the things that frustrated me the most, and I know I'm going a little long, is that I always believed people wanted their people in politics to work together to solve problems. It appears that in Louisiana, there's a base there that doesn't want anything but what they want in the way they want it. And that's on both sides of the coin sometimes.
Jenna, Jenna, you're next. Stuart in New Iberia. Stuart, good morning. You're on with Charlie Malasaw.
Thank you. Hey, Charlie.
Good morning.
I just want to say thank you for all the service you did and say that we missed you.
Well, thank you.
You were one of the last statesmen, and just want to wish you well and stay for peachy.
Well, I appreciate that, Stuart, and thank you for your friendship and those people that did stick with me in spite of the things that were said about me.
Jenna on Goodwood. Jenna, good morning. You're on WRKF with Charles Malasaw.
Hi, Charlie.
Good. Hello. How are you?
I haven't talked to you in ages. You're really good at explaining the difference between a public servant and a politician because you are a true public servant. And I think you have a lot of good years left to be that. But my question is, why haven't you written a book?
I think about it. I won't say every day, but the thought crosses my mind quite frequently. I am trying to earn a living so I can get to that retirement thing, whatever it is. Matter of fact, I had a conversation with the young lady who's a daughter of a friend of mine that does stockbroking stuff for me, and a young man who's the son of another friend of mine that they handle my money, and I asked them, will I ever get there? Was the conversation. I've always been involved in community stuff, would like to do more of that in Baton Rouge. Right now I'm trying to make sure that my bills are paid and that my wife and I can do stuff for our grandkids and our kids when they ask. And if I can get to that point where I'm comfortable again, because I gave up a job and businesses and to do public service, thinking that when I got out, I would be, we'd just start right where we took off, but It ain't that easy.
When we got an erudite listening audience, I was corrected when I said you are a youthful 65. You're a youthful 66.
66, wow. Yeah. I'll be 67 in October.
HB in Denham Springs. Good morning, HB.
Good morning. Congressman, thank you for your service to the to everyone, really. But my question is this. With the money spent by Mr. Cantor and his defeat and the far lesser amount spent by the victor, is this just the tip of the iceberg of things that to come?
But this was a primary, a Republican primary. So you didn't have crossover voting or any of that. And they said that the voting that occurred in this one was abnormally high compared to normal. So apparently Cantor had been labeled the liberal and was trying to throw that moniker back onto his opponent without success at the end. You can only let those things go so far before people actually believe they're true and they're not just an ad on the TV. And I think what happened to Mr. Cantor is he got caught too late in the game with when they realized that they had a problem.
Is immigration that big of an issue?
I think immigration. I had an interesting conversation with a friend of mine yesterday. He is in the oil field business. He is a Republican. He needs workers. He pays better than minimum wage. Mm-hmm. He pays his workers that come in from other countries better than minimum wage. He doesn't want to break any laws, but he's frustrated because he can't get the people he needs. And as I told him, I said, it's the folks in his party that don't want those folks coming here because they're afraid they may stay and they may vote someday. I mean, the dynamics of what's happening in the United States is the whites, the Caucasians, will be the minority in the future. Now, can't do anything about it, and it won't make any difference whether you stop these people, but if you need employees,
right,
they need to fix the immigration laws so that they can bring these people back, bring these people into work and then send them back home and do it in a process that helps America and doesn't hurt America.
Mm-hmm. Well, Congressman, you're always a delightful guest, and we've got some folks we won't be able to get to today, but hopefully we'll have you back soon.
I'd like to do that.
Good man, and it's appropriate that we talk with Charlie Malosoff for this final few moments of the show today. He is from Napoleonville, and it was on this date, in fact, this morning, about 30 minutes away from the 10-year anniversary of a car accident I had. And car accidents come and go, and sometimes people perish, sometimes people survive. Fortunately for me, I survived, but I would not have without the ultimate Good Samaritan, Molly Sullivan, who is with us, and I've never interviewed her. I've talked to her a few times over the last 10 years and always remember her on this date because she literally saved my life at about this time 10 years ago, June 12th, 2004. Good morning, Molly.
Hello, how are you?
Come a little closer. Now, Molly is a truck driver by training, and there was a huge crash, and I don't remember a lot about what happened after the crash. I remember some things, but Molly saw the whole thing. What exactly happened on this date at this time a decade ago?
There was a white Chevrolet pickup truck that ran you off the road. He didn't stop. You overcorrected and lost control.
And I ended up crashing into another vehicle, right?
Yes, you did.
And you saw the whole thing?
Yes, I did.
What did you do?
I tried to catch the individual that caused the wreck. He wouldn't stop. I turned around and I went back to the crash. I cut the convertible top off so that you would be able to breathe. I had 911 on the phone, and we waited until they got there. I talked with you to try to keep you calm and still till they got there, and they air medded you away.
Well, the person in the white truck's never been found, but the truck I hit by virtue of ending up in the wrong lane after avoiding the other truck was a Tundra. I was driving a Miata, a bit of a mismatch.
A bit.
But a violent crash, enough that it totaled the Tundra as well, in addition to my vehicle. Didn't take a whole lot to total mine, and it almost totaled me. I broke my neck, a lot of other bones, and I was losing blood to the point where that's what almost got me. So seconds, minutes certainly were critical, and if Molly had not stopped, I probably would not have lived.
I'm just sorry that I wasn't able to catch the individual that caused the wreck.
Well, those things happen, but I appreciate you trying, and certainly I owe you a debt of gratitude for saving my life. But it was 10:21 in the morning on the highway in Napoleonville, not far from the Sunshine Bridge, and you say a truck ran me off the road, then I rammed into another truck, and the convertible top had collapsed on my head, and my neck was broken. As I recall, I was trying to get out.
Yes, you are. You were trying to get up, and after I had cut it off, I sat on the back of the car and was telling you to just be still, that help was coming.
And if I had gotten up, I probably would have died because I had a broken neck. So you kept me down, too, which was another thing that was critical at that point. But not many people would have done what you did.
I just felt that that was what needed to be done. I mean, I don't think that a person would be human if they didn't stop to help.
Well, you were the only one who stopped on that day at that time. And I know you made the call to 911 when you drove up beside me. It was a violent enough collision, and the damage was such that you probably didn't think I was alive.
I didn't, and I kept telling 911 operator that I had thought that you had passed.
Yeah, and then you found out otherwise.
Yes, thank
what was,
God.
What was I saying?
You weren't saying a whole lot other than that you needed to get up. And I kept telling you to lay still, and talked with you, found out what your name was and where you were going, just trying to keep you calm until the air meds got there.
And I was answering your questions.
You are.
Mm-hmm. But I had fractured my forehead. I'd broken my neck. I had broken cheekbones, and a lot of my left ankle was crushed. Several other bones were impaired. And Molly kept me, fortunately, in that vehicle. How long did it take for the 911 people, the emergency personnel, to arrive?
It seemed like forever, but I don't think that it was probably 20, 30 minutes at the most.
And those were important minutes.
Yes, they were.
I know, based on what I was told, that I lost almost 6 units of blood. Mm-hmm. So it wasn't a pretty sight, was it?
No, it wasn't.
No?
Not at all. It's something that I won't forget.
Well, I have survived to the point where I live a normal life. I'm active. I exercise. And it would not have happened, number one, because of you, but I got a lot of great treatment after that at Our Lady of the Lake. And I do recall that when the accident happened, that I was asked by the Air Med people from Acadian Ambulance if I wanted to go to Baton Rouge or New Orleans, and I told them I wanted to go to Baton Rouge, and they took me, and they got me where I needed to go quickly, and as a result, I got the treatment that I needed to stay alive, and was put in one of those halos for 95 days, much to my chagrin, but whatever it takes. But it was a sobering experience, as you can imagine, and I didn't meet Molly until a few years later. It was Darren Mann, my good friend, who found Molly, and we met one morning at Saturday when our coffee group meets, and I must say it's an honor to know you, and without you, I wouldn't be on the air right now.
Thank you.
Well, thank you. And as a truck driver, are you instructed to do things like this, to be a good Samaritan if the time comes when you need to be, or was this just something that came from within your heart and soul?
That came from the heart. That isn't anything that you need training for.
Well, you went to Central?
Yes, I did.
Central High, and our lives probably would not have converged other than what happened at 10:21 in the morning on Highway 70 in Napoleonville 10 years ago today. Yeah, I remember it was a hot day.
Yes, it was.
And it was hot in that car when the top came down on top of me, but you cut me an air hole, didn't you?
Yes, I did.
That also, I might have suffocated if you hadn't done that.
That was my fear.
Yeah. So Molly Sullivan saved my life on this date, June 12, 2004, which I think is my second birthday. And I had I had just started the show on WRKF shortly after I was named station manager in September of 2003, so I hadn't been on the air that long and hadn't been on the job at WRKF that long, and fortunately, people were patient and welcomed me back with open arms and open ears when I returned in early October of that year and returned to the air, and I've been here ever since, thanks to the station manager, David Gordon, who's been there almost 8 years now, who has allowed me to have a place at this microphone. But I would not be talking to anybody on this earth without the benevolence of one Molly Sullivan. God bless you, Molly.
Thank you.
Thank you. And that's going to do it for today, but of all the guests I've had, this is my favorite one, because without her, there would be no other guests. Charlie Malasaw wasn't bad, though, was he? We'll be back tomorrow. For Frank Barnett, I'm Jim Inkster. Thank you for listening, everybody. Stay tuned.
Podcasts of The Jim Inkster Show are available at WRKF.org. The Jim Inkster Show is produced in association with the Louisiana Radio Network and is copyrighted by WRKF for the private use of its audience. Any other use of any portion of this program without the written consent of WRKF is prohibited. The views expressed on this program are those of the participants and do not necessarily reflect the views of WRKF, its officers, and members.